The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
Wouldn't mind filling in for Jerry Springer. That'd be a blast, too. It's the Paul Feinbaum Show. I'm Jason Fitz, filling in for Paul today and throughout the whole week. Having a blast hanging out with you guys as we talk all things SEC. And it only makes me wish for football season to come even sooner. 855-242-7285. I said it earlier. I'll say it again. We're looking for the best and worst SEC traditions. It's funny how we're getting the same. You know, the Cowboys haven't gotten any best, but they've gotten plenty of votes for worst so far. And the Eagle has gotten both best and worst. So we'll see where we are on that. 855-242-7285. The theme of the day, really, with that is works around Vanderbilt's baseball team and the Whistler. We all know the Whistler is strange, at the very least. But the theme around college football today is actually that Lane Kiffin may be smarter than all of us as we continue to look at the gap between Group of Five and Power Five schools, but even within Power Five. Like, Lane Kiffin is making it very clear that over the course of the next few years, he believes that there's going to be a small number of schools competing for a national championship and everybody else is just going to be competing for some level of relevance. I would ask how that's really any different than what we see right now. Like, going into this season, there are a few things we can be pretty sure of. And one of those is that unless you have a flawless, record-breaking, oh-my-God season, if you're on the West Coast, your team really doesn't have a great shot at the playoffs, right? Pretty soon, when Texas and Oklahoma make their way to the SEC, you're going to look at conferences like the Big 12 and say, wow, the path to the playoff is really difficult. We know that the teams in the Big 10 and the teams in the SEC largely control their own destiny. You go out, you win your conference, you're likely going to be in the college football playoff, right? So there's already a divide. I'm not sure what bigger divide name, image, likeness can really create because, frankly, if it's the haves and the have-nots, let's at least acknowledge the fact that most of the schools we're talking about constantly from the SEC are in the haves. They are in that level of category, right? So if it's about being left behind, let's be very clear. You're not suddenly going to wake up and be as irrelevant as, let's say, UNLV football. You're just going to have to figure out how to compete in the new landscape, and the new landscape is going to possibly give less teams opportunity. But the flip side of that is college football could come together, band together, and try and find ways to control each other without controlling the players. Schools could come together. It just hasn't happened yet. 855-242-7285. I'll give you more of my thoughts in a little bit, but you guys want to chime in? I want to let you. So let's get to Bubba from North Carolina. Bubba, what's your least and most favorite? We'll go best to last. Let's go best and worst of SEC traditions.
Absolutely the best is running through the tee while the band's playing Rocky Top at Neyland.
I'm telling you, I'm going to cut you off for a second, Bubba, and just tell you, you are so dang right about that. Like, there are goosebumps on my – when you say that, I've experienced that a bunch of times. Like, you are right. That is spectacular. Go on, my friend.
Oh, yeah, I'm ready to run through a brick wall when that happens.
You are absolutely correct. There's no doubt about
the
that.
The absolutely worst and most annoying thing in college football is at Williams-Brice Stadium when that frickin' rooster crows on third down. That drives me insane.
Oh, that was great.
I can barely make it through four quarters of that. That's so annoying. But it works. I get it. I know they do it to annoy the opposing team and fans, but that drives me insane.
Bubba, I appreciate the call on that one. I hadn't even thought about that until you mentioned it, and you're right. It is wild. And I told a story yesterday about the Vols. For me, spending 20 years in Nashville, you know, I was really amazed when I first moved to town and I found out that, like, Nashville, while it's right in Vanderbilt's backyard, is not a Vandy town. It's a Knoxville town, right? It's a Vols town. I never understood that when I first moved there, but I toured for a long time with a buddy of mine, Jason Tharp, and he's no longer with us in the world, but Tharp had the checkerboard tattooed on the back of his calves, and he was the merch guy for the band when we were touring. And every day he would come, every Saturday, he would come off that bus and he'd look up to the sky and he would scream, "Go Vols," at the top of his lungs. Now, I may never have been a Vols fan per se, but I've always been a Jason Tharp fan. And Ever since he passed, every Saturday, I look up at the sky and I scream, go Vols. I've experienced that many times. And running through the tee, man, that'll get you in all your feels every single time. Speaking of running through the tee, Big Al is in Rocky Top. Big Al, what you got? What's your favorite SEC tradition?
Well, I mean, it goes without saying, the best tradition in college football, and Lee Corso and the guys will tell you, running through the tee in Knoxville on a Saturday afternoon in the fall is absolutely, it doesn't get any better than that. So that's the best tradition. The worst tradition is those goofy gator people that look like seals out there trying to emulate a gator. Look like they're having an epileptic seizure. Has to be the worst.
Okay, so Big Al, I at least have to ask, because you've gone best as running through the tee, which makes sense. You've gone worst as anything related to the Gators, really. But and all I can think about is the rivalry for many years that existed between Tennessee and Florida at that level. Like, I'm not talking about rivalry. I'm talking about, we all know, the Peyton Manning years and what it meant for both programs. Are we sure that the rivalry isn't jading your thoughts a little bit?
No, not at all. I do like the bulldog peeing on Kirby's leg was probably my runner up, but the Gator fans trying to look like seals out there, look like idiots, is probably the worst or second to worst.
Oh, Big Al,
in my opinion. Just
I appreciate
it.
I love it. I love the call. I love the passion. And I love the fact we haven't had anybody defend Florida yet on these calls. I'm just saying, Florida has not yet chimed in on any of these thoughts. So we'll see if anybody in Florida wants to defend the chomp, as it were. And not a negative word yet. I don't think there's anything you can say negative about running through the tee. Like, you may not love running through the tee, but it's never going to be the worst on the list because it's not an annoyance. I would say if there's an annoyance in Neyland, it's absolutely the amount of times they play Rocky Top. Like, that's a total different conversation. It's the Paul Feinbaum Show, 855-242-7285. That's how you get in on the fun, as we break down the best and worst moments in SEC football, SEC traditions. What do you love? What do you hate? This is all in honor of the Whistler. I have to continue to say it loudly. If it weren't for the Vanderbilt Whistler, I don't think this would have even occurred to me today. But my God, I don't know why everybody doesn't just take air horns in, sit behind him, and every time he whistles, just put an air horn in his face and go for it. Like, if he's going to ruin your experience, ruin his. That's the petty child in me. Let me be very clear. That's me acting like a non-adult, right? I'm the first to admit that is me absolutely not being a grown-up. I'm just saying that if I was in a stadium and I knew the Whistler was going to be there, I'd bring a couple air horns and I'd have my buddies bring a couple air horns. And every time he went to do it, I'd just point the air horns right at him and I'd end that quickly. That's all I'm saying. 855-242-7285. I don't want to cut anybody off, and you guys are fired up about traditions. I love it. This is why I love sitting in for Paul, because I love talking to you guys, and I love how much you guys care. So we're going to let you guys take the show over. 855-242-7285. Your best and worst SEC traditions. We'll let you guys take it over coming up next on the Paul Feinbaum Show. I'm Jason Fitz filling in for Paul.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Paul Feinbaum Show, Jason Fitz filling in, hanging out with you guys, 855-242-7285. You can also tweet me, at Jason Fitz. You can hang out with me. If you're not tired of hanging out with me at the end of the week, don't forget to check out Spain and Fitz on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM, Channel 80, Monday through Friday, 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern. That's where I'm usually hanging out, and Sarah will be doing great work tonight there as always. So be sure to hang out with us throughout the summer and then throughout the college football season. Look for me all across the ESPN platforms. Love covering the sport. In the meantime, we're asking you the best and worst traditions across the landscape of the SEC, and you guys are fired up. I love every ounce of it. Let's start with Jeff in Louisiana. Jeff, thanks for calling the show. What do you got?
Hey, good afternoon. I have one that's probably the best and the worst all wrapped up into one, and that's the LSU band when they start the next song. It's hilarious, but you got to cover the kids' ears when they start that up. I don't know if you're familiar with that song, but it really is. It's a good tradition. I do have another comment, though. I've been a season ticket holder at LSU for 40-plus years. And, I mean, NIL and the portal, I think, are probably destroying the college game as I know it. But what's really troubling me is if, say, for instance, LSU loses two ball games, the players are basically the people that you paid money to come see, they're no longer playing. And a good example in our bowl game this past year, 33 scholarship players and a wide receiver as a starting quarterback. To me, and I understand it's a business decision, et cetera, but, you know, when you're paying the kind of money you do for season tickets, you want to see the best of the best and not, you know, half the team sitting out because they don't have a chance at the playoff. And I think maybe extending the playoff or moving some of the bowl games to the front of the season may help that. I just get your opinion.
Yeah, Jeff, I really appreciate the call. And frankly, I think you're right about, look, I've long since supported if kids want to skip a bowl game to get ready for the draft, that's part of what they're doing in life. You know, I have no problem with that. But you make a great point about name, image, likeness and what that means for return on investment for companies that are invested in kids. Like, if in theory you're being paid by a company to represent that company, they want as many representations as possible, right? So just sitting at a bowl game can suddenly reflect poorly, not just on the kid in some of those instances, but also the school and, frankly, then the sponsors. And the sponsor element of it is going to be very interesting because what happens when, you know, insert company name here, when, you know, Jason Fitz Music decides that he's going to have this one particular kid turn around and be, you know, part of the name, image, likeness for a school, and that kid turns out to not be a very good player. Like, where's my return on that? Or that kid does something, anything, on or off the field that suddenly reflects poorly on me. I mean, these are some of the complications that I think are ahead of us. You said earlier, and I really do appreciate the call, you said earlier it's destroying the game. I don't think it's destroying the game. I just think it's changing the game, and we got to figure all of that out. There has to be a better way with the bowl games to make the bowl games feel more important to the people that go to them. I do think that there is some moment there that truly matters to a lot of people, and I'd love to see it have more emphasis for everybody. Let's go to Steve in Alabama. Steve, thanks for calling the Paul Feinbaum Show. I'm Jason Fitz sitting in. Steve, what do you got?
Well, first of all, I have to give a shout out to Big Al for the seals description. It took me a good 2 to 3 minutes to calm down from the laughter after hearing that description. I thought that was magnificent.
That was well done.
But the best tradition for me being in Alabama is the fact that the University of Alabama has adopted Sweet Home Alabama, an internationally known song. I was driving back from Nicaragua in this car, and when I was in Guatemala doing the border checkup, and he asked, "What is your destination?" and I said, "Alabama." There was another immigration agent who grabbed his phone. I didn't know what he was doing. And while we were doing whatever paperwork I had to do, he hits a button and Sweet Home Alabama starts playing on his phone. And we just both started laughing. But it's Sweet Home Alabama. My least favorite tradition, also from the University of Alabama, is on radio after they've done all their pregame and they're playing their intro to the airtime of the game itself. They have this pre-recorded promo where this guy says, they've got music playing, I don't know what it is. Are you ready? And he says that two or three times, and finally he says, hell yeah. And I think that's absolutely disgusting. Take out the hell yeah. That is just, to me, as an old school Southern Baptist, I think that's filth.
Well, I you know what, Steve? I respect where you're coming from on that. Obviously, different backgrounds for different people, but Alabama, and thanks for the call, man. I think Alabama needs to know their audience a little bit with that. So if that reflects the values, if that poorly reflects the values of many of the people around the program, then they absolutely should. I am all in on every school really knowing their fan base. And I will say Steve's right, too. The number of times anywhere in the country, you can sit into any cover band when you're out on the road touring, and you can play Sweet Home Alabama. And it's funny that a song that is just so synonymous with a moment in rock and roll, you hit that first break after the Sweet Home Alabama, and somebody in the crowd will yell Roll Tide Roll. It's as synonymous with that. Like, there are two things you know all over the country. You can play Sweet Home Alabama, and somebody will scream Roll Tide Roll. And you can just say the letters O-H, and somebody in a crowd, somebody will finish it with I-O. So there are some traditions that are truly international. Dean in Fort Lauderdale. Dean, thanks for calling the Paul Feinbaum Show. What you got?
You know, I've always had a tough time understanding how ESPN's got all these former attorneys on the air, but you coming from the music industry, and I'll poke fun at you, being a fiddler player, even though I understand it takes a lot of talent to play a violin, just you making that switch has always puzzled me also. But congratulations on hosting the show. You'll see that it's quite a bit of a soap opera and romper room with some of the callers going back and forth at each other. But one tradition I love is at Missouri, when one side of the stadium yells M-I-Z and the other side of the stadium yells Z-O-U. And a new tradition that's coming to the SEC that people will begin to hate as much as anything is Bluma Sooner. And standing on a sideline during a game and hearing that song, and then right behind the visitor's bench was an old codger, and he had this five and dime store battery powered megaphone yelling at our bench and yelling Boomer Sooner. I'm sure he's no longer around, but it was pretty irritating. But then again, I think it probably became kind of humorous, but it's going to be a song that a lot of SEC schools will begin to hate.
No,
thanks for your time.
That is, Dean, that is a great call by you. You are right. Those are going to become, Boomer Sooner is going to become, and thanks for the call, man. I appreciate it. And, you know, thanks for, I think, the kind words. I think we're gonna say that it was kindness with the fiddle. Look, I've never shied away from how thankful I am that I've been able to have two dream careers. There is no doubt in my mind, getting to tour the world, playing the fiddle, and then deciding when it was time for me to walk away. I am forever thankful for the opportunity to be the musician that I was, and I'm forever thankful that I've been able to have such a great career at ESPN. It is wild. Dean, I appreciate the call, man. And, you know, to everybody that doesn't know my background, the one thing I would say is that anything and everything I've ever done in my life has been fan-supported, and it truly means the world to me that I can sit in this chair and I can talk to y'all. It means the world to me that I was able to make music that people still listen to. It means the world to me that I'm able to basically take my two loves, music and sports, and turn them into a career. So forever thankful for that. 855-242-7285 is how you guys can get in on the fun. I know a lot of you guys want to continue to talk about best and worst traditions. We will do that throughout the course of the show. Plus, some of you guys disagree with me on name, image, likeness. We're going to get some more of your calls. We're going to get more of your expertise. Obviously, it's 855-242-7285 is how you get in on the fun. Plus, one of my favorite minds at all of ESPN going to join us next. I'll get his thoughts on everything going on across college football. It's the Paul Feinbaum Show. Jason sitting in for Paul.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Paul. That's hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
It's the Paul Feinbaum Show on ESPN Radio. I'm Jason Fitz filling in for Paul. 855-242-7285 is how you get in on the phone. That's how you tell me your best and worst, your least and most favorite SEC traditions. There are certain people at ESPN that I love bringing on shows because, frankly, I read them because they make me smarter. And I think it's important in a name, image, likeness world. Like, I'm not here to lecture y'all, tell y'all how to get your information. I would say it would be smart for everybody to read as much as possible from people you think are doing a good job of giving you every side of it so you have the best understanding of what the new landscape looks like in college football. And for my money, one of the best to do that is David Hale. And we're going to talk to him now. You can follow him on Twitter at a David Hale joint. That's how you get to him. And David, I appreciate your time. Thanks for hanging out. Really, this is such a strange time for everybody to try and figure out. And I implore people to follow you on Twitter because you do a great job of breaking down all of the different angles along the way with this. One of which, even a few hours ago, you were tweeting about conversations with ADs worried that boosters are going to think they're GMs. How does that inevitability get avoided?
There's sort of a two-pronged dynamic here. One is that a lot of this stuff was kind of already happening, right? I mean, it's when a coach gets fired, yeah, it's partially because the AD made that decision, but mostly it's because the boosters came up with the money for that decision to occur. So some of this stuff, yeah, it's kind of happening. But what's happening is at a greater degree, and these boosters are sort of given a greater degree of influence. And the outcome maybe is good in some respects, because if there's money flowing to players, that's maybe a good thing. If there's, a level of financial well-being that is flowing through the these booster collectives and is helping the teams, maybe that's a good thing. But what we get is an increasingly sort of nebulous idea of who is running the show. And I think there's tons of obvious problems, and you'll hear from the coaches and the ADs the most obvious ones, which are, hey, we're supposed to be the ones calling the shots, and now we're sort of beholden to these outsiders who we need their checkbooks to be open, and they have opened them and paid and say, hey, I want my investment to look good, so you need to be giving this guy more playing time or that guy more playing time. That's problematic. But there's a trickle down to that, too, that can reach the players. And it's asking guys to be potentially on the field when they're maybe not ready, when they would be better off being developed better. But there's so much money invested. All right, we got to play them. We've talked about these NIL collectives and what they're paying these guys for is, you know, on paper, it is, hey, you're going to come and do a 30-minute appearance at my auto dealership. But really, what's being paid for is a pay-for-play thing. It's go to this school and perform well there. And if that doesn't happen, what happens to these players? And then, moreover, the contract language that they're signing is so nebulous in order to fit with the rules that sometimes they're kind of – I mean, you don't really know what you're signing. And some of these agents that are running these things are literally just a guy in a dorm room that they knew down the hall who said they'd take care of it for them. There's a wide spectrum of things that are happening right now. And yes, some of it is very good for the players. And in fact, it might be good for some of the schools too. But effectively we are shifting the level of accountability away from the names that we're familiar with to boosters that we're not so familiar with and are really not very accountable to anyone.
I just keep thinking about Friday Night Lights, right? Like, I know this is just a generic example, but I feel like Buddy Garrity's walking up to Coach Taylor and saying, well, you better play this guy. I mean, if we're living in a world where, you know, somebody decides they're going to do an appearance fee for somebody and they're paying a quarterback a lot of money, Coach doesn't want to pay him. I mean, there has to be ramifications for that at some point, right?
Well, and look, I've read accounts of coaches saying, like, I got boosters telling me they're ready to write a check to some recruit that I don't even want on my team. And certainly there's, again, a lot of this boosters have had influence for a long time. That's not new. But the influence was sort of at least funneled into very specific places. And now it is a much broader spectrum. Again, some of these people might be perfectly reasonable. I've had a lot of conversations with boosters, though, where and I'm not the brightest person in the world, and I certainly don't know my X's and O's nearly as well as even the worst of coaches probably do. And I know way more than these boosters do. And so the potential downside here is also big. So, I feel like there's the conversation has often been sort of watered down to, hey, look, players are finally getting something that they deserve. And that is true. But there's a lot of risk associated with essentially deregulating everything and saying, have at it, boys. Because what you get is, I've had coaches who say essentially some of these boosters act like they're running their own fantasy team now. You have boosters who, again, maybe are interested in luring a recruit who the coach doesn't even want, whether they think guys should get playing time or not. They want more return on their investment. They think they should have access because they chipped in towards these players that maybe they don't need to have. I mean, we've seen Texas is probably the best example of a place where there is too many cooks in the kitchen all the time, and a school that has every resource possible available to them still can't put together a consistently good football program. And it's because there's no alignment with all the people who have their fingerprints on that program. So, there's nothing inherently good or bad about any of these things, but it is definitely a mixed bag that we're still trying to figure out.
If you buy Lane Kiffin's interview a couple of days ago where he said essentially coaches, facilities, none of that matters, only name, image, likeness matters, how do facilities factor into the, like, I'm looking at this Georgia facility that, you know, was $80 million worth of renovations. Why pump that money in there if instead you need the money for name, image, likeness?
I don't think that's necessarily wrong. And I've had some conversations with folks who have said, like, look, if you weren't already at the forefront on facilities, you're going to be in real trouble. So a school like Florida State or Miami that are really just trying to make these investments now, they're doing this at a time in which, you know, every AD is essentially being asked by their boosters, like, where should my money go? And eventually, you know, some boosters are just going to decide, I don't need to ask anymore. I'm going to put it in this direction. And maybe that the market changes. You know, that's the other thing we don't really know. This is still very, very new. And so if you're super, you know, oil rich guy that gives money to Texas A&M every year, and right now you're donating a couple million to an NIL collective to make sure that players are coming to play at Texas A&M and are well compensated for it, and Texas A&M goes 8-4 next year, well, maybe you decide to move that money back over and put your name on a building, because that name stays there on that building for a long time. I think some of this stuff will work itself out. But frankly, a lot of the facilities investments, I mean, we spent years talking about how ridiculous and opulent some of them were. And the reason was because you couldn't pay a player directly. This was indirect player compensation. We're just moving it from indirect to direct now. And in some ways, I think that's probably better. I mean, how nice of a facility do you need? But the problem is for some programs and even some very good programs, again, I mentioned Florida State and Miami, like you're playing catch up against schools that already built the facilities and now also have the money for NIL, and they don't have to make the difficult choices. So it's those schools that are sort of in that B-, B-plus tier that are saying, I got to make some tough choices and tell my boosters where to put this money now, and they might not want to listen so much anymore.
A lot of accusations were made both by Jimbo and by Nick Saban about each other, but not many specifics were given by either. For all of your research and reporting and everybody you've talked to, have you been able to find any specifics from either side that back up what these coaches have accused the others of?
I mean, this is part of the problem, right? Is the whole point, the game is to avoid specifics. The more nebulous, the more secondhand you make everything, the safer it is to, if not walk right up to the line, maybe sprint right across it. That's how the game is played. And so Jimbo Fisher can sit there and be adamant and say, you know, none of my guys got anything, and also say, I don't know anything about it. That's not my job. I mean, there's clearly stuff going on behind the scenes. And you know, a lot of this comes down to don't ask, don't tell a little bit of like, hey, I don't want to know what you're giving a guy and what you're giving it to him for. Just I'm happy to see that this guy's here. You don't tell me, I won't tell you. I always used to laugh, and Jimbo was particularly adept at doing this, that they'd show up for like a Monday press conference and you'd ask about an injury thing and he'd say, well, I haven't talked to the doctors yet. And that was because he purposely scheduled his doctor's meeting to be after the media meeting so that he didn't have to answer that question. That's kind of how all of this worked.
Which is brilliant work by him. Hey, I won't pitch in on the worst because I don't want your mentions to blow up. Do you have a favorite SEC tradition for all of the stadiums you've been in?
Oh, my gosh. There's so many great ones. I've been to a lot of awesome, fun events. I mean, you know, War Eagle at Auburn is awesome. And especially like there was the one time that the War Eagle just kind of like flew away and went and I was hanging out in like the upper deck. That was my favorite. there's always, you know, one of my favorite things of all time is too, I used to cover Georgia. And when they show the video before the game, like the Georgia highlights and Larry Munson's voice over it. And every time when Ugo goes up to bite the Auburn player on that highlight, and the whole crowd before the game has even started, like, roars its approval for it. Like, there's just the little things that are so perfect about and so encapsulating of what being an SEC fan is all about. And I'm sure I could probably come up with like a dozen for almost every school.
Follow him on Twitter at a David Hale joint. David, I tell you all the time, man, super fan of your work because you make us all smarter. Thanks for hanging out with me.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
It's great work by him and really smart stuff on name, image, likeness, a complicated issue. It's not as complicated to get you guys to figure out your favorite and least favorite traditions. A bunch you want to hang on, want to tell me, so I'll let you guys get in next on the show. We'll take your thoughts on all things favorite and least favorite SEC traditions coming up next. Paul Feinbaum Show. I'm Jason Fitz, filling in for Paul.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
It's the Paul Feinbaum Show. I'm Jason Fitz, filling in for Paul. You guys can hang out with me at 855-242-7285. 855-242-7285. I want to get your best and worst SEC traditions. And obviously, we'll keep taking your thoughts on all things SEC throughout the course of the show. John in San Antonio. John, I know you want to chime in. John, what's on your mind?
What's going on, Jason? I miss hearing you in the morning on my drive to work.
Oh, man, I appreciate it. Thank you so much. It was an honor to get to be there for a while.
Oh, yeah. No, it was a great time. So I want to talk about NIL actually not being the future of recruiting. And we're already seeing the future of recruiting. So culturally, we've already normalized people teaming up. You see it all the time in, like, the NBA. Now, as players get more agency, you know, they want to play with, you know, the players they want to play with. Now, players are never going to have more agency than when they're leaving high school and going to college. And we're already seeing the future of recruiting and recruitment of Arch Manning. I mean, that guy, wherever he goes, a bunch of people want to go there. And you're going to see a team that's like an easy-bake contender. So really, it's going to be, you know, getting these groups of kids who already know each other through football camps and everything else all getting on board to go to the same spot.
The only question I have for you is, do you think, a couple of things, can enough kids come together with scholarships being the way they are? Like in the NBA, I hear you. In basketball, I hear you. You know, three or four guys coming together makes a huge difference. Three or four guys coming together, I don't know that that wins a national championship. And also, will schools leave the openings, for example, at wide receiver just to get a quarterback in that they would need to, for that? Like, you see what I'm saying? Like, I think that gets a little more complicated because there's more layers to it.
It may be a little bit more complicated, but, I mean, you're recruiting these kids, you know, a couple years out. You know, create some sort of, like, succession planning, things like that. I mean, you got Alabama signing the, what, number five quarterback in the nation last week?
Yeah, number eight.
And, yep. I mean, my apologies, number eight. So, I mean, like, you know, that probably sends, you know, some signs up to, you know, Arch himself, right? He might not no longer consider them as highly or not. But even then, you know, like, if Arch says, I want to go to Bama, you don't think Bama is going to make some moves and make some room for him and whoever else wants to, you know, tether along?
Yeah, John, I mean, it's not a bad point. I wonder if it's as easy, and thanks for the call, man. I really appreciate it. I wonder if it's as easy to tie together as that, but also I don't have a really hard time with that either. You know, I think there's some level of today, if you came in and said, okay, well, guess what? I can do a radio show with whoever I want. You know, there's freedom in that, being able to know you can work with your buddies, right? Like, if I can form a band with whoever I want, there's freedom in that. So, you know, if players want to go somewhere together, I'm all in for it. I just don't know that it would mean that winning a championship with your friends was the most important thing. And I don't know in today's world if winning a championship with your friends outweighs making sure you're NFL ready and making sure you get paid. I mean, that's the thing that Lane Kiffin says in his interview. He believes that the only thing that matters now is the amount that the check is written for. I don't know if he's right, but time will tell. Mike in South Carolina, thanks for calling the show. Mike, what you got? What's your favorite and least favorite from the SEC?
Yes, sir. Thanks for taking my call and enjoying the show today.
Thanks.
So I diehard Gamecock, but I'm going to have to agree with Bubba from Tennessee. The rooster crowing on third down is tough to swallow, even being a Gamecock fan. But the best tradition is 2001 going straight into Sandstorm. It's just a fantastic atmosphere, and you can't beat it.
You are echoing a sentiment I've gotten, and thanks for the call. Like, a few people have tweeted me on Sandstorm or 2001. I think there's something to that. I mean, that is definitely one of the best. And it's amazing anytime somebody that loves a school still comes in and says, yeah, that might be the most annoying, you know. But maybe that means you're doing your job right. If it comes in that you still might be the most annoying even in that situation, maybe that means everybody, you're getting under everybody's skin in the best way. AC in New Jersey. AC, thanks for calling the show. What's your best and worst?
Absolutely. Thank you so much for taking my call. Well, worst is everything about SEC is worse because the fame base is worse. And the best, how about Jumper On in Wisconsin? Let's face it, Jason. Let's think about this. All the fat Americans, they've been eating like left and right. The fourth quarter comes in. Here we go. You got to burn some calories. So what do you think about that, Mr. Jason? No one talks about that Jumper On. So, I mean, come on. You got to like it, right? Everybody jumping around. The music, it's looking great. I mean, think about it, Jason. Let me end up by saying this. How many SEC fans are jumping around while the game is on? I mean, they're just lazy and fat. Am I correct?
Oh, wow. Wow. Okay, they are not lazy. In fact, I will say this, though. Like, Jump Around last year was sort of a curse for Wisconsin. They kept doing it, and they kept blowing fourth-quarter leads. So, I don't know. There were a couple of times that I wondered if maybe they should press pause on Jump Around. Jump Around at Camp Randall is one of the coolest things I've ever experienced in my life. There is no doubt about it. I think it is an absolute reminder, by the way, that, you know, with no conference bias for me, I don't care. Remember, I grew up in SEC country, but I do not care which teams are best and which teams are worst. That's why I love covering college football. I can honestly say with all of that that the Big Ten has some incredible traditions. The Big 12 has some incredible traditions. Like, it's good for college football. Like, that's what makes college football so incredible to cover, is that the experience around game day is just unlike anything that the NFL or the NBA or college basketball even can offer. There is a magic to the way that many fans that care that much on that day together, man, it just gets all up in my feels every time I think about it. 855-242-7285. That's how you get in on the fun. I want you to tell me your favorite and your least favorite SEC traditions. We'll continue getting some of the great feedback from you guys on what you love and what you hate. That's all, of course, coming up on the Paul Feinbaum Show. I'm Jason Fitz filling in, and we will continue to break down some of the scheduling issues that the SEC is facing and why there's a really simple solution, even if people don't see it. That's coming up next.